Commerce Committee today, and today's date is February 16th, Wednesday, and the time is 3:22. Members present, Representative Lynn, Representative Ledoux, Representative Guttenberg, and myself, Chairman Anderson, so we do have a quorum. We have two bills today. House Bill 33, and that's Representative Meyer's bill, effects of regulations on small businesses, and then House Bill 108, which I think we'll have first here, and that is from our committee, House Labor and Commerce, having to do with the regulation of water and sewer utilities and political subdivisions thereof. I will present the bill really quick here, get my notes in order, and I know we have several people to testify, and we'll get to them, Mark Primo and Kate Yard from the Alaska Regulatory Commission, and we will begin. Now, I thought that was Representative Cott coming in, but I know he's on his way. House Bill 515 is a bill that a different number, of course, last legislature was attempted and I think ultimately died because of timing when it was introduced. And it has to do with changing the existing law in statute that prohibits Anchorage Wastewater Utility from essentially, Anchorage Wastewater Utility is under the regulatory purview of the RCA, and the bill attempts to exempt it from the RCA regulation like other utilities are, and I think Mr. Primo will get into that in more substance. The issue came before the committee in the form, again, of House Bill 515 last year and passed out in March 2004. There was pretty much substantive debate throughout the committee process and the House floor process. Local control essentially is the issue, and in my opinion, there's no evidence showing that state oversight is better for the consumers in Anchorage than local management. Clearly, this is a bill, in this case, for Anchorage, for the municipality. Representative Crawford has joined us for the record. And I've worked with the Anchorage Wastewater Utility and the Mayor's Office and the Assembly, Mayor Begich, Chairman Traney, and with Anchorage legislators to develop a plan for an oversight authority for the utility to maintain the level of consumer protection while encouraging and fostering stronger local government and local ownership and operation of that utility. We plan to see the details of this authority soon, but this bill's continued movement through the process is expected, and it should enhance the other legislation pending. On the teleconference line is Mr. Primo, as I noted, the general manager of AWWU, and he can answer specific or technical or even historical questions if the committee has this. Again, I know that Chairman Traney and Mayor Begich have endorsed this, and I think Mr. Primo can give you the historical perspective, which you might have read partially in the sponsor statement. He can go through more thoroughly. So, Mark, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself and state who you're affiliated with for the record, and then go through kind of a background of this.
Thank you, Chairman Anderson. I am Mark Primo. I'm the general manager of the Anchorage Water and Wastewater Utility, and I have been general manager since 1990. I also have with me in the room here today Brian Crewson, my assistant general manager. Between the two of us, I hope we can answer any historical or future questions regarding this utility and the bill that's in front of you. If it's okay, Mr. Chairman, I have some testimony I'd like to introduce.
Great. Go ahead, Mark.
Okay, thank you. As I said earlier, my name is Mark Primo. I am the general manager of the Municipality of Anchorage Water and Wastewater Utility, which is commonly referred to as AWWU. I am testifying in support of House Bill 108. This bill specifically would exempt AWWU from economic regulation by the Regulatory Commission of Alaska and place it in the same status as every other municipally owned water wastewater utility in Alaska except one, Pelican. Some background I believe is important. AWWU is two separate utilities, both subject to economic and service area regulations by the RCA. The water utility, a former City of Anchorage utility, has been under the RCA regulation since inception of the APUC in 1970. The Anchorage sewer utility, which was formerly owned by the Greater Anchorage Area Borough, was voluntarily submitted to the APUC for regulation in 1971. An umbrella organization, AWW, was formed in 1975 following the unification of the Municipality of Anchorage. The Municipality of Anchorage in 1991 petitioned the then APUC to exempt AWW and its electric utility from regulation. The commission split evenly by a 2-2 vote on the question of exempting the electric utility and AWW. The opinion by the commissioners opposing self-regulation cited competition by the municipality's electric utility and telephone utility with other utilities as the primary reason why AWW should remain regulated by the state. No commissioner suggested then or has since suggested that competition between the water and wastewater was present, nor is there any competition there today. During the last session, in fact, on April 28th, the House of Representatives approved House Bill 515. This bill would have exempted AWW from economic regulation by the RCA. Time ran out, and the Senate did not act on the bill. Why does the Municipality of Anchorage desire exemption from RCA regulation? Number one, the current RCA regulation process and procedures are slow and expensive. From 1993 to 2003, AWW filed only minor housekeeping and procedural matters with the RCA and never requested a rate increase. Yet, AWW ratepayers have paid approximately $2.8 million in regulatory assessments to the RCA during this period as a part of every monthly bill. In 2004, AWW paid $445,000 to cover the cost of regulation, and we estimate that in 2005 we'll pay more than $500,000. However, the greater cost to AWW and its customers is in the form of the cost of preparing filings and regulatory lag. AWW filed for the initial part of a two-phase rate increase and a refundable interim rate in January 2004. The public hearing has been delayed and rescheduled by the RCA and is now set for June 2005, 15 months later. This large delay substantially increases the jeopardy for the AWW ratepayers and AWW in the event that a portion of the requested rates have to be refunded. In addition to the unprecedented large amount of discovery questions, over 530 in all, this case has also become extremely costly. History and present events show that local regulation is faster, less structured, and more economical. Secondarily, current RCA regulations and procedures are non-responsive to local needs. The RCA process was designed for private utilities and is not entirely appropriate for municipal utilities. The RCA process is very structured. The RCA is not accountable to Anchorage residents. The municipality is more responsive to local needs and is directly accountable to the ratepayers who are served by the utilities. These customers are municipal voters. Public hearings are held by the municipality on all rate matters. I ask for the committee's support of House Bill 108. Self-regulation has worked effectively across the nation in other Alaskan communities and in Anchorage. Anchorage has regulated its own public utilities for many more years than have state regulators. The Municipality of Anchorage has a proven track record of effectively regulating the Port of Anchorage, Merrill Field, and Solway services. All are financially strong, healthy, reputable enterprises that provide excellent customer services. Rate changes have been infrequent. AWW has provided its customers with excellent service, low, stable rates, and sound finances. In 2004, AWW filed for its first rate increase since 1992. For more than a decade, ratepayers have benefited as AWW has reduced positions and expenses by leveraging technology and improving business processes, while at the same time increasing spending on system repairs and rehabilitation. This has all been done without direction or assistance or value added from the RCA. Over the years, the mayor and the assembly have made sound decisions in the oversight of AWW and other municipal-owned utilities. As the chairman has indicated, the Municipality of Anchorage administration and the assembly support the establishment of strong, independent authority to oversee and regulate AWW in lieu of the RCA. The Water and Wastewater Advisory Commission is currently meeting to develop an authority structure that will include strong consumer protection and provisions. They have held three public meetings in the last 2 weeks and expect to complete their draft by early March. The rate-making process would be very similar to that of the standard industry practices, developing revenue requirements and cost of service to meet the traditional cost-causer, cost-payer approach. In conclusion, with the passage of House Bill 108, municipal regulation of AWW will balance consumer protection with the financial soundness, and AWW will continue to operate on a sound business basis. This bill only makes a minor adjustment to the existing statute to facilitate the proper regulation of AWW and is identical to House Bill 515, which passed the House last session. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thanks, Mark. I'll get in a couple quick questions just for clarification. If the committee members have other questions, we'll get to those as well, of course. And then we'll get to Kate. And we'll keep you online, Mark, since you're the requester of the legislation, to kind of have the final comments from addressing Kate's concerns from the RCA. First question would be, you mentioned, and I know the answer, but I want this for the record, you mentioned that AWW is the only municipally owned, in this case, water utility, and I want to make sure for the record that's right, that is regulated by the RCA. Is that accurate?
Short of Pelican.
Okay, short of Pelican. And how many other, how many are we talking about municipal water utilities are there, wastewater?
I think the easier way to answer that, Mr. Chairman, would be all cities have municipally owned water and wastewater utilities, less the Fairbanks area, which is under private ownership.
And so none of them are under, other than Pelican, which, like you noted, is somewhat of an anomaly, none of those are under RCA.
That is correct. Okay. As long as you are municipally owned, you do not fall underneath the RCA structure. If you're privately owned, as in Fairbanks' case, then you do fall underneath the RCA structure.
So just for the committee's understanding, AWW in Anchorage is the only one, per his testimony. Secondly, with respect to the process, let's assume the authority isn't enacted right away. What would be the process if the RCA does not regulate? And of course, if I were a committee member that didn't sponsor the bill, which is everybody else sitting by me, I would say, well, what's going to happen in terms of regulation? We don't want to unregulate you or deregulate you. What would be the process immediately if the bill passed, let's say, in a month? And then what would be the process once the authority is created in Anchorage?
The process immediately, Mr. Chairman, would be the same as you see in Juneau, Sitka, Ketchikan, Kenai, Homer, the vast majority of cities within the state of Alaska, and that is direct oversight of the utility by the local elected officials. In the case of Anchorage, that would be the Municipal Assembly. Once the authority is established, then the overview of the utility, less items that are vested in the charter of Anchorage to the Assembly, would then be passed on to the authority.
And the authority would be, the AWW Commission is just one of the boards and commissions in Anchorage, like the Municipal Light and Power Commission or the Zoning Board or any of those. It falls under that construct, and you're saying that that advisory commission would establish the authority, and then there would be a new group that would of individuals that would serve as commissioners on that authority ultimately.
In general, Mr. Chairman, that is correct. Right now, we obviously are in discussions with three parties, that being the Advisory Commission, the Municipal Administration, and the Municipal Assembly, to actually implement that authority. The concept at the present, which is being discussed, is really taking our Advisory Commission, which is just that, an Advisory Commission, and making that to a higher level of responsibility and empowering it with some of the powers that the Assembly has right now with respect to oversight of the daily operations of the utility. It is envisioned that that authority, though, would have involvement of both the administration and the assembly in the appointment of the members.
Okay. And then the last question, thanks for those responses, the last question has to do with money. I'm looking at the, I'm playing devil's advocate here, by the way, I'm looking at the fiscal note, and if the should the bill pass, of course it will save income. Well, there'll be kind of a pro and a con. You talked about AWW ratepayers in the municipality of Anchorage having paid $2.8 million over the last few years because of the expense of having RCA be the regulator and there being a fee to some degree that has to be paid. But conversely, the fear that I heard last year, even though the bill passed out of House and it was hard for me to respond without assuredness from the municipality, what happens if under the assembly's regulation they decide every year to increase the rate, and there is no, I guess, control, or yeah, Representative Lynn said, if you heard what he just mentioned, there's no prevention of that from the Assembly, or my question is...
Well, I think I understand your concern, Mr. Chairman, totally, and we concur with that concern. I think there are two answers to that, and really the question is what is the control mechanism to the rates?
Exactly.
Presently, the way the rates are made up, what goes into the rate-making principles and philosophies, what is an allowable expense, not allowable expense, how do you carve your expenses up so the cost causer is the cost payer? Simply put, make sure that you collect allowable expenses. Do not overcharge a certain customer class, such as a certain type of commercial establishment versus a single-family resident. We would use the exact same principles that are used now in our filings with respect to the RCA. So from a rate-making methodology, same principles would be applied. That is what's standard in the industry. The next question is that... How does one look at the ability for the Municipal Assembly to regulate rates versus the RCA? My answer, I believe, is very specific and very short on that, and that is that I believe 11 elected local officials are much more accountable to the ratepayers, who are also voters within Anchorage, than a series of five state-appointed officials from Juneau.
Representative Crawford wanted you to repeat the sentence prior to what you just said regarding that process one more time.
Please. I you lost me there when you were saying that was the process of setting the rates.
Yes, Representative Crawford, the process for the short answer is the process in which we set rates today, it's called regulatory theory. The process we propose underneath the authority will be the same process that we would use in front of the commission today to establish the actual value of the rates. We're talking about the analysis of expenses and the collection of revenues from be it a commercial account versus, let's say, a residential account. So,
but the Assembly is the one that makes the decision? I'm sorry I broke in there.
Unless an authority is created.
Right. Yeah, the staff of the utility, as now, would do the analysis. That analysis then would be presented to the Assembly, presented to the Board for approval, ultimately go to the Assembly for approval, because by charter, the Assembly has the ultimate authority in establishing rates, and they would do it based upon the Board's recommendation.
Okay, and then, Mark, just tied in with that question, and also for the record, with regard to the actual process, I recall you testifying, and I just want to see if you concur with that in concert with your testimony last year. Didn't you mention that it's more difficult and detailed and assiduous and complicated to go through the RCA hearing process compared to a local process, whether it be authority or going to the Assembly? And isn't that one of the reasons, not just efficiency, but just intimidation and the fact that someone having to go before the RCA to complain about a rate is much more of juggernaut levels? I mean, I've talked to people, and with all respect to Kate, just in terms of the size in that process than a local hearing. Is that accurate?
I think that is very accurate, Mr. Chairman, and I think a specific example would be the rate case that we have pending in front of the RCA right now. In that rate case, we have had over 530 questions of discovery, and it's in a very, what I would call a formalized process, almost as if you're in a trial-type setting with lawyers involved, discovery back and forth, written responses. You can imagine the amount of time that takes up. And plus that, we're very concerned about rate lag and the ability for the RCA to hear and to make a ruling. Are these rates allowable or not allowable 15 months after the request?
Thanks, Mark. Are there any other questions for Mr. Primo? We'll certainly keep him on to respond to what Kate says. I'm sure Kate feels picked on a little here. but Kate, before we go to you, Representative Lynn has a question, and also for the record, Representative Cott and Roper joined us a while back.
Yes, thank you for your testimony. How much in actual dollars do you think the municipality might save if we get this out of the legislature?
That's a very, very good question, Representative Lynn. I think it'll vary on year to year. I think the one thing that is static would be the regulatory cost surcharge that this utility and all other utilities put on their bills to fund the RCA. We're predicting $500,000 in 05. That would immediately go away and not be obviously charged to our customers. The other part is that what is the cost of regulation at the RCA level versus the cost of self-regulation? I didn't think that's the genesis of the question. In hard dollars, that would be hard to define, but in my wildest dreams, I've got to believe that self-regulation is somewhat less than a quarter of the cost of regulation development at the level of the RCA. In terms of the rate cases we have right in front of them right now, that would be a savings in the neighborhood of about $250,000 to $300,000
today. And so, if it would not be charged to the customers anymore, that would mean a decrease in the water rate and the water bill that my constituents have to pay.
It would mean one of two things exactly. If the expenses of the utility did not go up per inflationary tendencies, that is correct, sir. There would be an appropriate amount of decrease associated with that. Short of that, it would take away from those direct inflationary costs by that appropriate amount of said money.
Thank you.
Good. Any other questions, Representative Crawford?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My concern here would be that the Assembly, faced with a tax cap, no ability to raise property taxes past that and they're faced with shortfalls, that they might try to backfill some way with revenues from AWWU. Can you allay my fears?
I believe I can, Representative Crawford. First and foremost, to go back to my initial statement, I believe local accountability is the most strongest form of accountability there is. If the Assembly did that, and let's say for the sake of conversation they could, and I'll get to that part of the question in a second, they would be accountable to their voters for re-election the next time out. So in there, I believe, lays the toughest decision that a Assembly member would have, and that is passing on through a veiled rate increase, a municipal tax hike, if you want to look at it in that way. And I believe that's a stopping point. In addition to that, part of the authority structure that is moving through the process right now is addressing that exact concern, which in essence says that unless the utility is financially healthy, a dividend should not be paid to the city. In other words, obviously we have to run like a business, and unless the business is making money through all proper reasons and channels, should we pass on a dividend to the city. And the Assembly is also accountable to the board, and the board vice versa. So there is quite a relationship between the two bodies.
And Mark, before we get to other questions, another thing last year that was brought up, folks said, hey, this is, in this case, Mayor Begich, this is a political or a partisan effort, and the response by you was that, well, wait a minute, the Assembly, the mayor, I mean, this turns, we've had Republican mayors, Democrat mayors, it's supposed to be nonpartisan, but even if someone thinks it's not, this is evolving every year with Assembly elections and again, the mayoral election every three. Do you still feel that way as well, that it has nothing to do with partisanship as much as local control?
I agree with you totally, Representative Anderson. I think the simple issue is local control, and associated with local control, is the community sophisticated enough to self-regulate itself? And I would suggest that the municipality of Anchorage is as sophisticated as any community within the state of Alaska and has the ability to oversee its own utilities.
Well, I sure appreciate your phenomenal job there at AWWU. I don't know if there are any questions, Representative Guttenberg. Did you have one?
Sure. Yeah, I do. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Primo. Thanks for some of the insightful comments. Taking the utility out from under the RCA removes the, amongst other things, the consumer protection aspect or the public advocacy section. I'm just wondering, and that's and not in relation to rate-paying situations, but what does the assembly have to do as far as what's in place currently to address those issues? Or would it be, I mean, is there another commission set up? Or would it be a case-by-case in front of the Anchorage Assembly?
I think that's a very good question. And we've talked to our advisory commission about that at length. And if I can do well for a little bit, maybe go in a little bit of a circle of how we get to where we're at. Presently, what you're asking for is, what is the accountability as me as general manager and the utility staff to our customers? That's really the question, how we provide our services. Presently, if there is a concern with our services, it goes, you know, maybe to the assembly member or maybe directly to me. Small investigations are done. But should the customer not like what is being done, the ultimate answer is, well, it's tariffed. Tariff means it's when there are rules and regulations that are approved by the Regulatory Commission of Alaska. And the ultimate answer is, you can go see the ombudsman from the municipality, or you can go see the RCA and talk to them and see if we're following our rules of engagement, so to speak, with our customer. Once you take it, and it becomes a very easy answer for myself, my staff. I can't speak for the elected officials in Anchorage, but I would think it would be an easier answer for them to go say, go see and talk to this regulatory commission and make sure they're following the rules they said they would. You take us out from the RCA overview, that means it's total local control. That means then I, as the general manager and the rest of the staff, will be accountable directly to the authority, and the authority ultimately to the elected officials for the way we actually conduct our business with our customers. We will not have the ability to say, go see the regulatory commission and see if we're following our rules accordingly. I actually think we'll be more accountable.
Any other questions? Okay.
Let me just follow up. Thank you, Mr. Chair. How many consumer complaints that weren't rate-based have there been before in the RCA in your case?
Was that a question for me, sir?
Yes.
How many complaints have we had that have gone to the RCA? Just for a second, I'm going to stay online, but look at my regulatory affairs manager who's in the office with me and see if he knows that number off the top of his head. You know the answer. No, just consumer complaints.
We can hear you, Mark.
That's okay.
So don't cuss.
We got that answer over here for you, Mark, if you want.
Okay, that'd be great. Thank you, Kate.
No worries.
Only we can cuss.
Shall I answer, Mr. Chairman?
Yeah, go ahead. If you could state your name and affiliation for the record.
Hi, my name is Kate Guyard, and I'm the chairman of the Regulatory Commission of Alaska.
Oh.
Just to help Mark out here, 29 complaints 2001 through 2004, and 7 complaints year-to-date.
Thank you.
Okay, well, Kate, why don't we go to you next? Perfect timing.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much. It's very nice to speak with you again and the members of Labor and Commerce. I think that there, in my testimony that I gave the other day, there's a number of concerns that were brought up by the various representatives sitting around the table, and I would like to address some of those. First of all and foremost, I would like to say, as the former chief fiscal officer for the municipality of Anchorage from the years 2000 to 2003, I can give you my personal assurance that the water utility and the wastewater utility is a very finely run organization. I have absolutely the utmost respect for Mark Primo and how he has brought that particular utility under the auspices of the management of the assembly and certainly whatever mayors were in place. But it is Mark himself, to a great degree, who's had the leadership that brought this utility to the position that it's in today. And it is in a very good position today. So the legislature, as they make this policy decision, should take great comfort in that. And I have some experience and background in that. I think I also want to address several of the comments that were made about the type of service that the RCA offers. The regulatory framework is constructed in a very formalized manner, and it's done that way intentionally. The reason that it's done that way is because once a utility brings a rate forward, it's held out to the public, and the public tells us what they think about that. And we offer opportunities for the public to come in and say, we don't like that rate case, or we're concerned about that. And once that happens, we kind of take off our regulatory hat, and we put on our judge's hat, and we actually kind of become judges. and a case is created out of that contested. What's going on right now with the AWWU rate case is that the Attorney General for the state of Alaska looked at the increases, which are approximately roughly 20% increase in the water utilities, and came in and said, you know, we're concerned about this, and we want to do some investigation. So what we do at that point is we sit back and say, okay, there's a utility that wants a rate increase. There's, a party that has a problem with that rate increase, and they come in a court-like proceeding before us. And the interesting part of this that I keep hearing, so I sat down this afternoon and did some research, is that it's a 15-month or 16-month timeline, and that's a darn long time. And the RCA, in many times, deserves a poor timeliness reputation. And we're going to fix that, I promise you. But in this particular case, those comments trouble me because the parties establish the schedule. And so I went and I looked, and in January of 2004, AWWU files its rate case. Our staff said, you know, if we could approve it just on the quality of this filing, we would do it. Because it was a very high-quality filing, most complete that we probably had. We had a scheduling conference. The Attorney General came into the case, and we had a scheduling conference on June of 2004. In between that, we had notice, and the Attorney General comes into the case saying, we want to investigate. Well, the parties themselves then set the schedule. We agree to it, but we try to accommodate them. And, you know, they have agreed to an original 9-month time period of case preparation. And they need to do that because they're doing discovery, they're investigating. And subsequently, they extended that to a much longer, a 12-month case preparation. Now, there's a lot of reasons for that. But it's not that the RCA is saying, you know, we want this to take a long time. It's that a case of this significance, where you're increasing the rates by 20% to ratepayers all across Anchorage, it is of a great concern, especially at least to the Attorney General. So that explains at least a piece of what we do and the timeline associated with it. It was something that the parties themselves constructed. In terms of the local control issue, the RCA doesn't have a particular policy standpoint on the local control. I think local control is a fine idea. I think that as long as there are processes in place that you can mimic the Regulatory Commission of Alaska. It's not rocket science. It can be mimicked. I would wonder why you would want to go through the cost of mimicking it, but that's the mayor and the assembly's prerogative. The question that I have and the challenges that I see from your perspective and giving you guidance is that they're not really ready yet. I mean, they have a rate case going on. They haven't really provided you with a sufficient degree of comfort in what the form of the oversight agency is going to be, what powers does it hold, how are you going to assure your ratepayers, voters, that they won't increase their rates again year to year to year to year to year. I think someone brought up the question about, you know, the tax cap and the property tax situation here in Anchorage, and certainly in my previous job, you know, I had great desires to look over to AWWU and see a fertile grassland funded by a different revenue source than property taxes, but I wasn't able to access it. And the local government today can't access it, except that the local government raised the property taxes for AWWU 3 times in 2 years by 300%. That's the basis of this particular rate case. You have a tax bill that went to the utility that went up by $6.4 million. And so that is the essence of a lot of the struggle. AWWU, unlike you and I, cannot protest its taxes back to the municipality of Anchorage. It just pays. It's not that they want to or that they want to pass that on to the ratepayer. They pay. Is that right? Is that fair? Is that just? I don't know. It's going to be decided in the rate case. So when we look at the value that the RCA provides, the regulatory environment provides. It certainly can be mimicked by the assembly and by the mayor. And I trust that they will do that. For your perspective, I would think you would want it a little bit more defined so you can say to your ratepayers, yes, you're going to have a specific amount of increase in you know, 2005 in your bills. But I can assure you, because I know what's going to happen in the structure and the setup, it's defined. The assembly has passed it. They have given us some kind of assurance that this is the structure. We've looked at it. We're comfortable with it. We feel that we've done our fiduciary responsibility to you in letting regulation go. They can do it. My comments to you are that they're not quite ready yet. They haven't quite prepared their case sufficiently for you.
Thank you, Kate, for your testimony. We'll have questions, and I'll begin with those. First of all, with respect to, and I've learned this having elected 2 years ago, my first term, I noticed the onslaught of entities and utilities wanting to get outside of the RCA, the telephonic issues, waste management. She knows this, telephony, pipeline tariffing. And so every entity seems to want to get outside of the RCA, and sometimes there may be partial merit and other times not. And so I understand there is certainly a need for the RCA, and I also compliment you for your really diligent and hard work. And you've always been stellar in working with me since your tenure with the RCA. But to that end, if anything, and knowing the administration you worked for before, I would assume you agree, and you partially talked about that in your testimony, that if any time an entity should come outside of the RCA, this could be the chance. And it's because the precedence is and the codification statutorily, no other, as Mr. Primo noted, municipally owned utilities of this nature are under RCA other than the city of Pelican. But also, if you look at kind of not wanting to put the cart before the horse, in my opinion, I want to get your reaction to this. If we pass this legislation, then whether or not the public in Anchorage wants the assembly to be the hearing entity for this will be dictated by, you know, their perception of the legislation. And if anything, I think this will expedite an authority being created, because now AWWU falls under city purview and regulation. And so don't you think, first of all, that if any time there were to be the opportune time to remove something from RCA purview, it would be now? And secondly, don't you agree that there's merit in passing the legislation to expedite the creation of this authority, as Mr. Primo talked about?
Mr. Chairman, I, in responding to your question, I think that any time that you, as a policy call, feel comfortable that the municipality of Anchorage will provide some mechanism to protect the ratepayers from paying for a greater cost of government than really just a water bill. Once the legislature has that sense of comfort, there's really no reason that the Regulatory Commission of Alaska can't stand down. We don't need to, you know, pull this utility into a stranglehold and regulate it when there are very competent methods and mannerisms at the municipal level. They are much closer to the voters. There's a lot of reasons to let it go. And in giving you my policy advice, you know, as the former CFO, I wanted it to be let go too, in a big way. So knowing why, and knowing what's happened, for example, with Fairbanks, where, you know, they didn't have perhaps the same kind of planning that AWWU has in place, and that utility, once it came out from underneath the economic regulation, it became worth less, not worthless, but worth less over time, because it did become a cash cow or a funding source for city government. And And that's the thing, I think, that is our highest calling here. Not, shouldn't it go? Yes, it should go. Not, when should it go? The answer is anytime you feel comfortable that it should go. We do not need to regulate it. They are capable of regulating it themselves. My only guidance to you is respectfully let them put those practices and procedures in place. And frankly, between the time that I testified a couple days ago and now, you know, Mr. Primo's testimony shows that they've actually had a lot more discussions and a lot more conversations going on. And I think probably by the time this bill moves forward, there'll be even more. But they are in the middle of a rate case, and it's a pretty important rate case. I mean, there is value that's being added to looking at that whole structure. So I don't know what timing the legislators are preparing, but I would think you'd want to finish this rate case, get it done, and allow the city to take over. You know, once the rate case is complete, then they have a rate that's been fully vetted, and then they move forward under their own control. So I think you can expedite it. I think it's probably a good year, and maybe there's a little bit of language that you want to put on the bill. I think it has a momentum. I think that everyone's going to work toward it, and I think in the end it'll probably be a good thing for the water utility and the city.
Thank you, Kate. Any questions, Representative Guttenberg?
Thank you. Concerning the rate case, do you have a timeline for that? I mean,
I did give a timeline out. I don't know whether this Ms. Sadler has a timeline prepared to hand you. She should be in the audience.
We have one, Kate. It's right in front of them.
Okay. There's a hearing date through the chair. There is a hearing date established right now that the parties wanted on 6/14/2005. We don't have any other unusual events occur. Hearing would be on 6/14/2005. The RCA, I've got a 7/30/2005 issue order date. So that's kind of the timeline that we're looking at right now.
So if this legislation passed and was signed quickly, theoretically, if it went into effect before that 7/30 date, that rate case would become void.
Through the chair, I believe that is correct.
And your recommendation?
But Mr. Primo could also have his own legal opinion on that, but my belief is that the rate case would just fall away.
And your recommendation would be to have language that the bill takes effect after that rate case decision?
Through the chair, I think I think you'd have an opportunity to say to the ratepayers who are voters, you know, we allowed the RCA to continue their process. They independently set this rate. And that's really kind of a good way of passing the baton of control to the assembly.
I'm going to allow Mr. Primo to respond to that, but kind of in conclusion of the public hearing portion. So are there any other questions to Kate from the RCA? Representative Roper, do you have any? No? Okay, Mark, then why don't – thanks, Kate. Stand by as
yes,
well.
Sir.
Mark, why don't you – I hate to have last responses here, but why don't you give your interpretation of that and any responses to Kate?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Starting with the last issue with regard to the continuation of the rate case and the effective date of any legislation, I have not requested a legal opinion of that yet, so, but maybe now that it's been raised, I will look at that. I will say this, though, that we would not have filed the rate case with the RCA as we did in June of 2004 if it hadn't met all the structural integrity issues required for a rate case for expenses and the associated distribution of those expenses to the customers appropriately. The information that Madam Chair offered regarding the numbers associated with the rate case are correct. I think the big issue, and I concur with Madam Chair, that when would the legislature be comfortable with self-regulation by the city of Anchorage. I believe the House spoke loudly last year that they are comfortable. Unfortunately, again, we did run out of time. We do have the board formation going through now, and I expect that to be somewhat formalized, at least in a conceptual way, in the next 30 to 45 days. But even without that, I believe the municipality of Anchorage has proven through the overview of the port, Merrill Field, Solid Waste Services, that they do know how today to run an enterprise fund. The other thing, tying the legislation to a defined date certain based upon an ongoing rate case that has been ongoing since June of 2004, when in essence we were, January of 2004, when in essence we were done with our analysis of what the rate should be and still ongoing now, that it could get protracted out for a lengthy period of time, and that would be my biggest concern.
And Mark, isn't it true, we talked, as Chairman of Labor and Commerce now for 3 years, we talked in 2003 about this, no legislation. I mean, this legislation last year wasn't as a result or in parity with that rate case. I mean, we talked about this, I believe, in the first months of the session of the beginning of the 23rd legislature. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, that's exactly correct. This is an ongoing issue, and the rate case that is being brought in now and the discussions about the rate case are all new issues that were not in front of us last year during our discussions.
Okay. Any other questions for Mr. Primo? Seeing none, is there anyone else? Of course. Representative Roquebrick.
Sorry, Mr. Chairman, I just want to clarify a few things here. Mr. Primo, I unfortunately missed the last hearing on this. I just want to make sure I am concerned. The committee would look forward to your legal opinion about the effect of the statute on the current rate case. But as I take it, your opinion is that you've already done your filing and are satisfied with your rate. So, would not be true to say why spend the time, energy, and all these legal fees to pursue the conclusion of the rate case and wait for a year? Would that be correct? Are you satisfied with what the interim increase has been granted to you?
No, sir, we're not. And the reason I say that, Representative Roperk, is that our rate case we filed in January 2004, requested and said at that time we would want a two-stage rate increase. One stage would be for the 2004 interim refundables, and the next would be for the second stage, which would be January 1, 2005. At the time we filed our 2004 request, we were under the opinion that we could move through 2004, move through and get to a permanent rate hearing and review the interim rates request for 2004 and make permanent the rates for 2005 through a 2004 rate proceedings. Fast forward real quickly, Representative Roquebrick, what has happened is the rate case hearing has been moved out to June of 2005, and as of this date, we have not been granted our request for interim refundable rates for the portion associated with the 05 cost increases.
Mr. Chairman, follow up, so I understand that. So you're not satisfied with the interim rate adjustment. You would like to see fundamentally refunds back to your consumers because of that. Is that correct?
No, Mr. Roperk, the other way around. In essence, the adjustments in the rate was broken down for a portion to be implemented in 04 and a portion to be implemented in 05, an increase in rates to the approximate 20% across the board that the chairwoman has previously spoke of. We have not received the rate increase associated with 05 yet. We're operating without that. So for me to say, am I happy with the rate increases that have been granted to date, the answer is no, because they have not granted the second request of a two-stage request.
But, and Mark, though, this is Chairman Anderson. I want to be able to bifurcate this in the sense of Representative Roquebrick's questioning on rates, and I don't want interested parties, gavel to gavel, viewers, others, to perceive this as because you responded that no, there's not going to be an immediate rebate should this case go your way. The bottom line is, and your point has been, House Bill 108 and the previous House Bill last year is for local control, is for efficiency and a simplified process, and is for whether it be the assembly or a new authority to oversee. And your point has always been that that'll be more responsive for local needs. And your point has been that we're paying every year $500,000 plus to have the services of RCA, and whereas you respect them, you think that the city can do better. You've never said on record, and I don't blame you for saying, well, you know, admitting that that there's an easy way to reduce rates, or that because of the bill passage, you will automatically reduce rates. And I would think people would advise you not to guarantee that, even though Representative Lynn's question is pertinent, and we all want that for our relative constituents. So isn't it true that, I mean, you can't guarantee rates are going to lower ever, but that's what you would prefer to do if possible?
That is correct, Mr. Chairman, and I do think we do need to stay on point, and the point is it is an issue of local control like in other cities in the state of Alaska, and we should not bring into play the present ongoing resolution of rates between ourselves and the RCA.
Okay. Representative Roper?
Well, Mr. Chairman, what I was trying to get at was this whole issue about whether the effective date of the bill should be post to be immediate or how it would affect the rate case. That seems to be right on point.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to understand it. Matter of fact, I am very concerned. I'd like to pursue further questioning of Ms. Primo as to why there was a 14-year lag between the filing, and the fact is there was a massive rate increase to both residential and commercial consumers here because there was either a failure or a decision not to file a case, and I suspect in part because the significant costs involved in that, when in fact if they had local control, they wouldn't have to worry about that. They could make incremental periodic adjustments in rates to their own internalized tariff, so they wouldn't have to have these major hits to the consumer. I mean, I think this is very burdensome to the consumer when you have these very large one-time type adjustments in the utility rate structure. I think that's bad policy.
Well, I might have misunderstood Representative Roper. I thought he was trying to set for the record that, hey, there's not going to be a guaranteed rate.
No, I was curious
decrease.
About how the rate, that there's two different questions here, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah. Well, why don't you respond, Mark? It sounds like you agree with Representative Roper that 14 years.
I can make that very short answer, Representative Roper. Between 1992 and 2004, the utility did not have a rate increase because we did not need a rate increase. We were able to control our expenses through a whole series of avenues. We can discuss that at length if you want. And as Chairman Garrett has said, the rules of taxation of our plant value were changed by local control by the Assembly in 2003, implemented in 2004 and 2005 on a staged increase of 40% increase in valuation, 60% of that said increase in value over those 2 years. That is what is the major driving factor in the rate, with the rate filings in front of the commission now. It has nothing to do with the way the assembly ran or did not run the utility between the years 1992 and 2004. It is a change in the taxation methodology which is driving the rates now.
We're going to go back to Representative Roper, and then after your next question or comment, then we're going to go to Representative Crawford to break it up.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, Mr. Primo, it would be fair to say that the legislature didn't cause the result of a burden on the property taxpayer and the consumers in Anchorage. It was the Assembly who changed their tax evaluation methodology, thereby forcing this tariff increase onto the consumers. Interesting. I appreciate that. I'm going to have to absorb that one, Mr. Chairman, just a little bit.
Notice that Mark's silent.
I think that's the testimony. And I have a couple other questions, but I defer to Representative Lynn.
Let Representative Crawford get
out.
Representative Roper, just for clarification.
Yes, sir.
The millage rate that was applied is the same millage rate that would be applied to your residents in Southwest Anchorage. So that's, in essence, what the Assembly did was they applied the same millage rate to all of our plant. In the past, some of our plant had not had the millage rate applied to it, but the rate of application is the same.
Just like they do today with the property tax evaluation.
Yes, sir.
Representative Crawford?
Thank you. This is just a point of clarification. I don't understand what you mean by an interim refundable rate. What's refundable about it? If you could just explain that to me, I'd feel so much better.
Yes, I can, Representative Crawford. It is a method in which the Regulatory Commission works with their clients, and this utility and other utilities. In essence, the utility comes forward to the Regulatory Commission and says, we need a rate increase, let's say for discussion's sake, 10%, okay? the Regulatory Commission gives it a quick purview, and if the rate filing, the supportive documents look in order, they'll say, you know, an interim refundable rate increase at 10% looks feasible. We'll grant that to you today, but we cannot do a formal hearing on it for 3, 5, in our case, 15 months in the future, at which time we'll make a ruling on should that rate that you suggested be appropriate. Let's say, for example, they look at the numbers and decide that, no, 10% wasn't appropriate, it was only 8%. They would then say to the utility, you can raise your rates by 8%, but 10 months ago or so, you raised them by 10%. You owe 2% back to your consumer. Interim refundables until they're made permanent.
Thank you.
Okay, well, Representative Guttenberg?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. If you come out from under the RCA, Mr. Chair, that might be a promotion or not, depending upon how you look at it. If you come out from under the RCA and you want a rate increase, I would assume somehow you would go before the Assembly or some entity not yet in place. Wouldn't they need the expertise to make these decisions? Wouldn't there be an increased cost to the municipality, recognizing the municipality is supportive of this language also?
Yes, Representative. I think there's two answers to that. One, by local Anchorage Municipal Code today, all rate filings go to the Assembly for approval prior to moving them on to the RCA for the State Commission's approval. So I believe the Assembly has some expertise in managing this utility. We're only approximately $65 million of a just short of $400 million budget, so they obviously have a large overview that's much larger than this utility. Secondarily, by charter, the Assembly will be required to be, no matter how this authority is put together, the Assembly will be part and parcel to any approval process, because that is ultimately vested in the charter of Anchorage, and there's no suggestion to change the charter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Here, Representative Roper, why don't you wrap up with your questions, unless someone else has a question, and then we'll close the public hearing.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I am curious about, I'm not sure I understood, and I do apologize because I wasn't here last week, but this board or authority, I think there's been some testimony about that. Mr. Primo, exactly where is that in its organization, and what authority is the Assembly authorized the creation of that board, and then how quickly will that board be in place to take over this responsibility if this bill does happen to pass?
A good question, Representative Roper. I have had discussions with the mayor and senior administrators in the administration. They're all in concurrence that an authority is the proper form of governance for this utility. Both and the mayor and myself have also had conversations with Chairman Traney. He is also in concurrence that the authority is the way to go. It has been requested of us as a utility to work with what is referred to as the Anchorage Water and Wastewater Advisory Commission. That is a 7-member group appointed, recommended for appointment by the mayor, confirmed by the Assembly, that advises this utility on matters of policy and operational control. We have had 3 public meetings with the Advisory Commission to date. To discuss the formation of this authority. In fact, we have another one in 2.5 hours with them again. We are on a schedule to have something from the Advisory Commission to the administration somewhere in the middle to late March of a recommendation of what this authority would look like and the controlling principles, et cetera, that are embodied in their bylaws. I would love to answer the questions, where do we go next with that, but I have not had that discussion with the mayor or Chairman Traney to date.
Okay, any other questions from Representative Roper? Seeing none other. Okay, do you have any last-minute comments? I don't want to cut you out from responding to anything before we conclude public testimony.
No, thank you, Mr. Chairman, for asking.
Hey, and thanks for your commentary. I know it's difficult. I don't want to say we're on opposite sides here, but I think you've represented the RCA very well in your comments today, and I recognize kind of the dilemma you run into because you have to wear so many different hats, and with a pending case, I recognize it's somewhat tenuous to give a definitive response regarding the bill, but I think we can keep working on this and hopefully come to some compromise. And with that being said, I don't see anyone else that wishes to testify, so we'll close the public hearing portion. Representative Guttenberg,
Yes, thank you. As you close the public hearing, I'd like to point out that we haven't heard from anybody in the public. We've only heard from the RCA and the utility. I don't know if a story is going to be generated in the press or what kind of public process. There's an anchorage for addressing these issues, but I'd just like to point out that we haven't heard anybody from.
And I appreciate Representative Guttenberg's comment. The nice thing is we have a 1-800 number. We have an email system. This was scheduled 5 days in advance per the statutory requirement that we have. We have gavel to gavel, which I'm looking at now, waving to public watching, hopefully thousands listening to this. So if they want to call in, they certainly can, and would be eager to hear their testimony. That's a good point. Without any other comments from the committee, we'll close public hearing, and I would ask for a motion to move the bill out of committee, and with the expectation that Mr. Primo will get us documentation and an overview by letter or correspondence regarding how this will affect the case should the bill come into play. Representative,
sir, I have a couple of questions before. You want to have a motion and then?
Well, we don't have to have a motion, but the reason I want to keep, we can close public testimony and keep Mr. Primo on as an expert, but if you're going to ask me, I would defer to him.
No, that's fine,
yeah,
right?
I'm
that's
the facilitator, but he's the expert on the issue.
Mr. Chairman, you seem, as if you, I certainly want to come back to chair. I'm moving a bill, but I am concerned this is this the last committee referral?
Correct.
No?
Correct. Well, has it given to finance?
Because it has fiscal notes, even though they're positive fiscal notes.
Okay.
Or negative finance.
It's CNRA.
It's already had a CNRA.
That's what this is the second committee.
And there is finance? Okay, so that was added to it. So then I didn't realize that either.
Okay, well, that.
So it'll have three committees.
Okay, well, Mr. Chairman, it seems to me, and I'm somewhat familiar last year with this legislation, that I think clearly there needs to be some provision under the legislation to provide for the current rate case. I think we need to speak to that in the bill, and one way or the other, whatever the consensus would be, or do the right thing. Because if we were to pass this legislation, we would be leaving the interpretation of what the status of the case was up in the air. Guess what? Somebody sued over it. Yeah. So we need to simplify and avoid additional costs. We need to at least make a determination whether the current case should run its course or should be terminated.
And I think Mr. Primo is committed to have that response before we have the first hearing in House Finance.
That'd be great. I mean, so that's good, and I appreciate that. Yeah. Plus, I'm glad to hear there is this process made on this authority, but it might be, I think, exceedingly helpful to get a message formally, unless we have already, from the Anchorage Assembly with the resolutions indicating that they are prepared to pass an ordinance to establish this and to pick up the baton where we to pass it. Now, failing that, I'm a little bit concerned there, and not that I don't believe they won't do that. I am concerned that it will be done and that we are doing our job to make sure the public's protected. Because I believe in the bill, because I think it's rather ludicrous that there's 50 communities in Alaska that aren't regulated, but Anchorage is the only one besides Pelican. I mean, give me a break. So we need to resolve this, but let's make sure we resolve it in a timely and the proper manner.
Well, I agree.
So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to make a motion.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we move with individual recommendations in the attached fiscal notes, House Bill 108 from committee.
Any objection? Seeing, hearing none, so moved. Appreciate your comments. Thank you, Mr. Primo and Kate. And we will go next, and I don't think the sponsor wants to move it. No, I'm seeing a head shake, so we'll just
Mr.
have
Chairman,
a...
Mr. Chairman, can we have brief at ease?
Yes, we can. Brief at ease. And Bill 33, and Representative Myers asked, and you want to confirm that for the record, that the bill not be moved today and just you give the presentation? Okay, state your name.
That is correct, Mr. Chairman. And for the record, my name is Michael Pulowski, and I'm staff to Representative Meyer. He apologizes that he can't be here today, but I wanted to provide a brief introduction to House Bill 33, let you know about some of the changes that we were working on in the committee substitute that we are proposing, and let you know where we would like to go from here and initiate a discussion with the committee.
Okay, well, I will move first that we have before us, bring before us CS for House Bill 33, version G, for discussion purposes. Seeing no objection, that's before us, so you can talk about those changes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A brief history behind House Bill 33. In 1980, the federal government enacted the Regulatory Flexibility Act. And what that directed was federal regulatory agencies to consider the impact their regulations have on small businesses, to study the effect that they have on the economy, and to make their analysis available for the public. And in doing so, consider alternative methods of meeting the same regulatory goal. In 1996, the Small Business Regulatory Enforcement Fairness Act was passed, and that added a judicial review provision to the Regulatory Flexibility Act of 1980. The Office of Advocacy was created by now President Bush in the Small Business Administration, and they estimated that in 2002, regulatory flexibility statutes saved small businesses in this country $21.1 billion in compliance costs with federal regulations. Based on the success of the federal program, the Office of Advocacy has drafted model legislation for states based on the federal model, which brings us to House Bill 33. House Bill 33 is the model legislation offered by the federal government and the Office of Advocacy and the Small Business Administration. Versions of this bill have been passed in 37 other states at this point. During this legislative session, Alaska, Hawaii, Washington, Mississippi, Virginia, Utah, and New Jersey all have regulatory flexibility legislation under consideration. The premise underlying House Bill 33 is really twofold. First, that regulatory agencies should consider the impact their regulations have on small businesses. And second, that regulatory agencies need to be given both the freedom and the encouragement to evaluate alternative methods of meeting the same regulatory goals when their regulations apply to small businesses. That is the general premise of House Bill 33. But like all models, House Bill 33 needs to be tailored to meet the specific needs and applications in Alaska. Working with the administration, we have made a few changes and three primary changes that are incorporated in the committee substitute. And just for the committee's benefit, I would go over those changes quickly. First, we have limited the scope of the studies that are called for in Section 1A of the bill by adding a phrase that says, using available information and without conducting new studies that are extensive.
That's page 1, line 7.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The idea behind that is in Alaska, we are all sadly intimately familiar with the EIS process. And when this legislation came out, when agencies were reading the economic effects statement, the immediate reaction was that the level of study that needed to be conducted reached the 2 to 3 year process that an EIS would provide. It is not the intent of the sponsor or the intent of House Bill 33 for agencies to hire scores of economists to conduct studies on the impacts of regulations that might, in the end, cost small businesses a few thousand dollars a year. At the same time, House Bill 33 is about giving agencies flexibility to use their available information and common sense to make decisions that meet the intent of statute and are appropriate for the regulated community. Turning back to Alaska, the second change that we made is to page 3, line 14 and 15, a new subsection G, removing regulations promulgated by the Board of Fish and Board of Game from the provisions of House Bill 33. And the logic behind that being that the decisions made by the Board of Fish and Board of Game are, by and large, allocation decisions and automatically have an adverse impact on small business. And that would be fishermen and guides. So the idea being that these are very open, very public processes to begin with, and in and of their nature in Alaska, can't really be subject to the provisions of House Bill 33. The third and final change we made to House Bill 33 was to remove the judicial review process from the bill. Looking at it being problematic, opening up these regulatory decisions to challenges in superior court, in evaluation seemed to be expensive, burdensome, and on a cost-benefit analysis, not appropriate to the level of discussion that we were having. With that, those are the changes that we have made that are incorporated in the CS. Representative Meyer is continuing to work with this piece of legislation with the administration, would like to continue to work with it, with the committee on it as well. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I would close and answer any questions.
Sure. And Representative Lynn, before you ask, so you're still working on this, and you want basically questions out, and then you want to have it brought up at another date. Is that correct?
That is correct, Mr. Chairman.
So Representative Lynn.
Yes, Mr. Pulaski. On page 1, line 5-8, you indicate using available information and without conducting new studies that are extensive. What does not extensive mean? How do you define that? Is it different to eyes that behold it?
Through the chair, Representative Lynn, that's actually one of the things that we are working on, is how we set a threshold in the language that is appropriate both for the agency and for the community that's being regulated. Agencies, when they're promulgating regulations, have access to quite a bit of information when they're conducting the regulatory process. The important thing being that we don't want them conducting economic analysis to any significant detail. And that being language that we need to work on and are certainly open to suggestions from committee members on how we get there.
And just,
sure.
I know you're going to have difficulty. You know, what is significant detail? You're trying to find a gray ghost in the fog.
Through the chair, Representative Lynn, you are correct. It's a difficult thing to work out in the language.
Thank you.
Representative Ledoux and then Representative Crawford.
I think this is the intent of this bill seems really laudable, but I worry about the phrase may have an adverse effect on small businesses, exactly how that is defined, because almost any regulation or any law that's ever promulgated may have an adverse effect on somebody. So would it be the intent of the sponsors that virtually all regulations before they're enacted would have to have this type of study?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, in all intents and purposes, probably yes. In talking to the administration and the regulatory agencies, providing a new direction and a new focus that at a premise level directs the agencies to consider more than just the direct statutory and the direct legislative direction on any given regulation is the underlying premise. That's where other states and the federal government have come at this from. Part of the impetus of that is that, by and large, a lot of our small businesses are started by people that either don't have the resources or, in fact, are new to this country and don't have the experience working with a government where you can offer your fears, offer your concerns, and they react to the regulation after it's been passed. Those that have the ability to be involved in the regulatory process are involved in the regulatory process. And what House Bill 33 and the model legislation has done nationwide is say the regulatory agencies have the knowledge, by and large, to consider the impacts of their actions. It has a wide-ranging effect, and in other states that have had the judicial review process, it is amazing to see some of the regulations that have been challenged in court through this process. But it should affect just about every regulation issued.
Follow-up, Representative Ledoux?
A follow-up. I haven't seen a fiscal note on this. And if you're going to be doing something on just about every regulation, it might have a large fiscal note. Is there a fiscal note that I'm missing?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, you are missing them because the administration is still working on them. And in discussions, they would prefer to work, and the sponsor would prefer, to work off of a committee substitute similar to this, where we've cleaned up a few of the initial concerns, work towards a better solution, and get fiscal notes that are more reflective of both the intent and the scope of the bill before we come back with it.
So it's in progress.
It's in progress.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good question. Representative Crawford, then Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've got a couple of concerns here. One, it seems to me like you're changing the definition of small business. It's up to 100 now. Seems like most places in our statutes we call a small business under 50 employees. And also, it seems to me like we're almost getting to the point where for every regulation, they're going to have to prepare a fiscal note how it will affect each small business that they might be regulating. Am I wrong, or is that...
Through the chair, Representative Crawford, no, I think you're absolutely correct. The issue of the impact on small business, that is a broad policy decision that has been offered both at the federal level and in each individual state. And it's the question of how responsive and considerate should the regulatory process be on small businesses. The issue you raise of the definition of small business is one of those issues of tailoring a federal model legislation to the uniqueness of Alaska, and it's something that we are still working on.
He's taking notes, notice. This will make the bill even better. Representative Guttenberg?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Recognizing that this is a clearly work in progress, and recognizing that regulation many times creates just a big knot in the business community, I just see this as tightening the knot so that it's you're making a Mobius strip where you're just tightening it so much you're not going to be able to untangle it. Many times the decision or legislation simply is giving an advantage or swaying one decision against another business interest, and that's clearly what happens. And if you're going to go about minimizing those things, I mean, it might just completely undermine the whole sense of the legislation to begin with. And then using available information without conducting new studies precludes you from finding out how simply the effect of legislation and regulation would affect something where you didn't know circumstances before, and you need to come up with a new study to actually see what happens. So you're hampering yourself and hindering yourself and actually saying we're not going to do any new research to actually find out what it is. Maybe we'll use research that applied something else that wasn't really germane in a good percentage of the case. So I hope as you work on this you kind of loosen some of those knots.
Thank you, through the chair, Representative Guttenberg, for that.
Any other comments, Representative Roebuck, your thoughts? And
a couple questions, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Pulaski, has a small businessman read this bill?
Through the chair, Representative Roebuck, we have been in contact with most of the state chambers of commerce. We are starting to get several letters of support from small businessmen and women, and we would be happy to provide that to you as we move forward.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I will look forward to saying that, the staffs of chambers and so forth. Ms. Pulaski, you were that the legislature, as a matter of policy and statute, it requires those businesses and occupational licensees or businesses predominantly in the, well, by that I mean all occupational licenses must be self-supporting. Many of those that we hold occupational licenses are either independent or professionals that are or sole proprietors or lead small businesses. It clearly here by this bill and has been set forth by many of the committee members here would have an incidence of fiscal cost. And under our occupational licensing division, under the Department of Community and Economic Development, there's a traditional friction or conflict between charging enough as required by statute to meet all the obligations, and additionally the department then adds its own overhead on stuff. I mean, I see absolutely no net benefit to small business if their licensures and cost of doing business is going to be increased substantially because of more regulation, not deregulation. So, I mean, that's the real... If you understand that kind of matrix, that only includes those people that happen to have an occupational license. But that is we're talking tens of thousands of businesses here in the state. I mean, do you give that any consideration?
Through the chair, Representative Roebuck, yes, it's a very important point because the fiscal impact in the loop you're talking about is outside of the general fund spectrum. And it is something that we are paying a lot of attention to in working with the administration on. The administration in the future will be here to testify as to, and so will the Office of Advocacy, in how this has been implemented in the 37 other states that are currently operating with it. But it, you make a very important point that we are working on right now.
And I see that no one's going to speak today, but I see advocates for the state chamber and other. I mean, I think people are at least privy that the meeting's going on and that that the bill is in the hopper. And I think we just it's a work in progress. That these questions will give you guidance, I think, and instruction as your as the bill evolves.
Mr. Chairman, I've been a small businessman in the state for 40 years. This scares the bejesus out of me.
And you're not even 40 years old, which is unique.
Right.
Okay, we'll hold the bill then. Thanks for coming. And I will then, yep, we're done, and I'll adjourn the meeting at 4:45, and thank you for attending.
I'll hold my question.